Blog Talk Radio.
Matrix, 923, how do you be corrected as driver? You have a fire in a one-story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control. Squad 5, squad 5. England to 273, 273. England Battalion, 1818 Battalion. With a 273, 273.
Good evening and welcome to the Chaplain's Corner, Fire Engineering Radio, and we're excited to have you back here with us. We've been off the air for a couple weeks for some other things that have been going on and just haven't been able to get here, so we're excited about being able to be on the radio again. When you're on shift and you're doing a radio show, sometimes you end up on shift on days that radio shows are coming up and it's hard to switch sometimes, so I'm glad to be back with you. And we've been doing this for a few years now and just love the opportunity. Normally, if it's in the wintertime, we get to brag a little bit about the weather we have down here in Florida and how cold it is everywhere else right now. Everybody else gets to brag about their weather, and we get to complain about how hot it is and how muggy it is and how many mosquitoes are around and things like that. So that's what we're dealing with. It's June 13th, 2019. I'm originally from Missouri, so all my friends who are St. Louis Blues fans are very excited that the Blues won the championship last night in hockey, and they've been calling me and putting messages on social media, and all my Boston fans are very upset they didn't win because they're looking to have a championship parade about every 3 or 4 months in one of their sports. So they're very disappointed they weren't able to do that. So all my friends are complaining about that. And you know, there's a golf tournament on now. I think the U.S. Open, and then there's a basketball finals are on, and then we get to the dog days of summer with sports and some of those things that people keep track of. And there's lots of different things going on in our world right now, along with political things and issues over in the Middle East and all kinds of stuff that you can keep up with. And this radio show is an opportunity for us to talk about our craft and to kind of sometimes get our mind off of some of the other stuff and be able to look at some things that are important. And our specialty here is talking about the chaplain service. And what we found in the chaplain service is that there's a lot of issues that deal with more than just faith and religion and those types of things. Instead, what we find is that we have lots of conversations about mental health and emotional wellness. And what we've started to do is expand a little beyond that and try to make this an opportunity to have conversations with people who are making a difference. We've had people on here who have shared the stories there of the experience they have and the things that they're doing and the differences they're making. And we've written articles about that, and we've gotten to meet lots of people at FPIC and other organizations and departments, the National Fire Academy and other conferences. And you get to see there's some people out there that are really doing a great job. And one of the things that recently came up was that we had Allie Rothrock on here a couple shows ago to talk about her program On the Job and Off, where she teaches and trains in an online setting, and really originally started just offering to volunteer departments and now has grown and expanded to where she's offering it all over the country to all different kinds of departments and dispatchers and communicators and firefighters and EMS personnel, just everybody really. And she's doing such a great job. And we're just excited to kind of be a part of what she's doing there. But one of the things that happened is she and I talked and got to spend some time together at FDIC, I got to see about the organization she's become a part of, which used to be called iWomen, and I'm sure I'm going to mess this up, so I have a guest coming on in a minute or so who's going to help make sure I do all this right, because it used to be iWomen, and now it is Women in the Fire Service. And so we have Angie Hughes, who is the president of Women in the Fire Service, who's going to join us tonight and talk to us a little bit about some of the direction they've gone, because I got a chance to talk with Allie a little bit and got to see her passion for this new direction that this organization is taking, but also got to see some of the things that are happening out there that the organization is doing and some ways that the rest of us might be a part of it, maybe able to help it, and really just have a conversation about it. So we like to give the platform to people who are making a difference. I think that's what we're doing tonight. So we're happy to have Trish on the air with us tonight, and we're going to have her join us now. So Trish, are you there? Hello.
Hi, it's Angie here.
I'm sorry, Angie. Angie.
I wasn't sure if you had another guest tonight. Hi, how are you?
I was going to say I have a friend named Trish Hughes. And I looked and saw Hughes, and I don't know why I said that. My apologies. I have it written right here, Angie Hughes. Sorry about that.
That's all good.
Maybe my friend Trish is listening and is happy that I said Trish Hughes on the air. So, but we thank you for joining us. And I'd like for you to, first of all, just tell us a little bit about your experience in the fire service, Angie, and kind of what your background is so people kind of know who you are.
Sure, absolutely. Be happy to. So I started as a volunteer at the age of 16 in the area where I live, Baltimore County, Maryland, was one of the youngest paramedics in the state and was hired in 1989, going to date myself a little bit, by the Baltimore City Fire Department, and then in 1992 by my current department, Baltimore County. We're a major metro department. I've been really lucky and fortunate to have great experiences throughout fire service. I've functioned in many positions from EMT, paramedic, firefighter, fire marshal, lieutenant, and currently I'm a station fire captain. So in the career service for 29 years, really enjoy what I've done in the past 10 years, being a part of Women in the Fire Service and being able to represent and make a difference has made a huge impact in my career. And again, I feel really lucky and fortunate that I found this organization or they found me. It's opened the doors for so many things, and I've learned and grown in every step and way that you can imagine.
That's great. And my parents live just outside of the, they live in the D.C. area. So I'm very familiar with Baltimore and been up there quite a bit with them and occasionally fly into BWI when I can't get into the airport nearest them. So I've been in Baltimore quite a few times. And, of course, you're near the National Fire Academy, too, so I think a lot of people who've been up there know the area a little bit. You said you've been there for a while. Tell us a little bit about the you said iWomen. I know that's what it used to be called. iWomen is what I called it. It's Women in the Fire Service. But when did that start? When did iWomen start?
So actually it started back in the early 80s. You know, women have been in the fire service for many, many years with the first career firefighters coming in the mid 70s. But iWomen started as Women in the Fire Service in 1982. Somewhere along the lines, they joined with the fire chiefs and became the International Association of Women in Fire and Emergency Services, and then was shortened to iWomen. A bit of a mouthful. So this past year at our conference at FDIC, we recognized the need for some change, and with some reaching out to a bunch of our stakeholders and membership, we went with the new name and we went back to the original of Women in the Fire, Women in Fire.
That's great. And what was the purpose of when this was started? Because I know I had heard the term iWomen, and I have a lot of friends who have been very involved and are very influential women in the fire service. You know, there's around here, we have Chief Maddie with City of West Palm and Trisha Walford, who is up there near you in Maryland, and Adina Ali in North Carolina, and Diana Herndon over in Iona McGregor, and of course, Ali Rothrock, who I mentioned before, and I could mention a lot of others, and I could mention a lot of females in my department, but if I mention one and don't mention all of them, I'm going to be in really, really big trouble when I go back on shift.
absolutely.
But, you know, that's true. So, but I know that these women have a great influence. And I would just love to ask you, what was the original purpose behind starting the organization? Because I got to talking to them and kind of got to see what they were doing when they were speaking at this conference in the last couple of years, and some of them have been involved in that. And I just started asking questions. But I think a lot of people are just unaware of, first of all, the existence of the organization, and if they are, they don't really know what it entails. So what was the purpose when they started it?
Sure. So the purpose when they originally started it was to be that voice, to speak for women, women's issues, you know, address things, be that spokesperson, that voice. Somebody can come to and ask questions and represent each other and try to promote each other, mentor, those kind of things. And along the years, the organization has grown into an organization not just for women, but for men and women, because it is about being one big family. So while the organization, the majority of the members are women, we still have, our membership is very diverse, where we can represent all types of people. We look at things, a lot of people will talk about women's gear and having the gear that fits properly. Well, for a small, a male that might be smaller or has smaller hands, the research that's been done on our behalf is a benefit to them as well. So while we represent women and speak for them in the profession, we are a diverse organization that represents, you know, the fire service, because that's what we want to be, is we want to be one family that understands each other and works together for the better of the community that we serve and the institutions.
That's great. What are some of the, you mentioned a couple there, the gear and some things. I know we've talked before. I've had a female at my station who just chuckled one time when she looked at the uniform, not even the gear, but the uniform itself, and said, "Yeah, I'm supposed to wear that shirt." And I laughed, and she goes, "Yeah, and those pants." And then, of course, our department has grown tremendously and does a great job now, and really has done a good job of making sure there's all different kinds. But, you know, there's still departments out there that I'm sure don't even take that into consideration and just have one type of, you know, pants or shirt for everybody, and it's one size fits all. What are some other issues that you guys have seen or faced or have seen that have maybe you've changed and have seen changed over the years, or maybe some of the original challenges you face?
Sure. Well, you know, when we look at the fire service too, it's not just career departments. There is a higher percentage, according to the NFPA's last studies, there's a higher percentage of women in the volunteer fire service than in the career fire service. While we're still underrepresented in comparison to police or military or, you know, other jobs that are physical, you know, there's still women in all kinds of aspects of the fire service. And there are needs when we talk about gear, uniforms. You mentioned Chief Wolford. I met with her just a few weeks ago, and we joked about that as well, you know, having a shirt that fits, you know, pants that fit, not having to wear men's boots. When I first came in the fire academy, I had to wear men's boots. I wore men's gear for most of my career until just recently. So there's some of the small issues. Also looking at the construction of firehouses. When I started in the career fire service in 1989, I used the men's room, they didn't have a separate women's room, and I didn't want to use the men's room, so I used the public restroom. And that was traditionally in the area where I worked, where the women, you know, where they went to, and we didn't have a shower. If we had to shower, you know, all the men had to wait. We put a sign on the door. So even something as simple as facilities. And as we grow and change and seeing the remarkable work that's been done as the amount of women come in the fire service, we're looking at things now such as maternity policies and accommodating breastfeeding at work. So we went from, you know, the things such as gear and uniforms to, you know, helping people that as they progress in their families and become moms. And there's just so many things. And, you know, one of the other issues that we don't want to talk about, and you mentioned, you know, mental health, is bullying and harassment. That happens too. And for the most part, you know, the nation is recognizing that that's a problem, and we're talking about it now, and we're open and honest with our feelings. So I can say, at least for my nearly 30 years in the career fire service, we've seen a lot of great changes, but there's still ways to go. We're still way underrepresented in the numbers and the percentages. I believe nationwide in the career fire service, we're still looking at just under 5%, and in the volunteer fire service, around 7 to 10%. When you look at women in a male-dominated profession, typically you're about 20%. So, you know, we're making great strides, but there's still challenges for us.
That's thank you for bringing up those points. Those are really good. I know that for being the chaplain of my department, I have individuals, male and female, who have come to me and shared with me different stories about, you know, possibly, you know, the bullying or the harassment. And I know our department has done a really good job of proactively going after that and making sure we keep that from happening, mm-hmm. you know, to where we're not having hazing, things like that. But I also know that in talking to individuals that share that stuff, it is an issue. And it's one of the things we don't talk about a lot in the mental health part of things. We talk about the overall mental health. We talk about the critical incident stress. We talk about the calls we run, the vicarious trauma, all those things. And sometimes we forget that sometimes the enemy can be within. Sometimes it can be that firefighter who's not treating the other firefighters correctly, regardless of gender and regardless of race, regardless of ethnic background. And we just have people that are just plain mean, and that just can happen anywhere. But I think you bring up a great point that's something that I've talked to a lot of our firefighters about that I really wasn't expecting. And even in having discussions with Allie and her sharing her story and then really talking to me about the stories others have shared, I've started asking different questions of the people I work with now. I start asking questions like, hey, have you ever felt harassed? Have you ever felt bullied? And I'm surprised at the number of people. I'm not surprised anymore. I was initially very surprised at the number of people who admitted yes. And a lot of times it was a long time ago and not near as recently, which is a good indication. But there was a lot of that I was really stunned by and didn't expect. And it was, I think that's one of the things I've learned from this process is sometimes you just have to ask the questions. You have to be able to say, hey, I may not like the answer, but I'm going to ask the question to see if we're struggling with this and nobody's talking about it now. And I feel like that's something you guys are very, very good about because you help the conversation begin.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up Allie and she's so resilient is the best way to describe her. And what she's doing for the fire service is absolutely amazing in her training. And that's what I think for years we were missing was the training and education, because sometimes people didn't even realize, and truly still, some people don't realize that what they say or do may be offensive to others. And their behaviors are just what they've learned from others. And one of my favorite quotes from a chief in New Mexico, Jonah Olson, she said, "The dinosaurs may retire, but they lay eggs and teach bad behavior." So, you know, we're learning tradition, and that's a part of the fire service, but sometimes the tradition that is a part of our culture is teaching those bad behaviors, and now we're taking it, you know, taking the time to train and to learn and to educate. And I truly don't think there's very few bad people in the fire service. They just don't know the difference between right and wrong when it comes to these things. And it's exciting to see the education and training out there and that people are having those courageous conversations because they make the world of difference.
Well, and you said it exactly correctly. And the one thing I would tell you is whoever decided to recruit Allie onto your team should get an award because anybody who has any team out there and has any board, or you could be getting Allie on, and she's going to hate me for saying that, but you, I don't care what it is, what the cause is, Allie is the most passionate person in the world. And so she could probably make whatever organization it is better, in my opinion, because you're exactly
absolutely
right. Resiliency is the word that comes to mind with her all the time. She talks about that resilience is an act of rebellion. And it's just such a powerful statement that she makes there. One of the other things I want to ask you, and you mentioned a little bit about it, is, you know, underrepresentation. What is being done or what needs to be done to change those numbers, to bring it to where it is more representative of what it should be and what you want it to be? Like, what are some things that maybe you guys are doing, or maybe there's some things that local departments can do to change that?
Sure, and that's a question a lot of people are asking, and I get many fire chiefs that call me and ask me that from around the country. You know, Angie, what can I do to recruit? We don't have any women in our department. And I think it first starts with being proactive, not reactive. That being proactive and having those policies in place and having the facilities, having the proper fitting gear, and, you know, making it a welcoming environment for somebody. And yeah, it's the fire service and we all have to do our job. And I would never say drop standards or lower standards to hire women or to recruit female volunteers, but be consistent in your practices and policies. You know, CPAT is something that many career fire departments use, and it's tested, and as long as it's used and utilized appropriately, it's fair and it's equitable. But having, you know, somebody just come up with say a physical ability test that you just get a group of people together and you don't really think about the science behind it. If it's a bunch of men, it may be something that just is easier for them to do. And you have to think about the time differences that it's going to take for men versus women, because our strength in the lower portion of our body, not the upper body. And we have to be able to do the job because we would never want to put anybody at risk. So when you start out, think about that, you know, you don't have women, what can you do? But then when you recruit the women, you know, how can you make it the best environment for them to succeed? That's truly very important. Nationwide, people are looking and asking for help. And I, you know, I like to share this one story. It's so funny. I was in a 4th of July parade a couple years ago, and I hear the firefighter behind me laughing. And, you know, we're waving, and all the kids are smiling at us. And apparently, as I would wave to them, they would go, "Oh, my God, it's a girl." And he's laughing. And I said, what is so funny? And he said, they are just amazed to see a woman on a fire engine, much less that you're sitting in that right front seat. You know, he said, I never really thought about that perspective of things. And having that, you know, having women out there, if you have women in your department, volunteer career, using them as a tool for recruitment, you know, they're going to be your best publicity, so to say. You know, if you have somebody that's passionate like Allie, put her out there, let her talk. And recruiting in the right places is truly huge. A lot of women don't see themselves in this job, and you can go to a college and go to an athletic department and probably recruit some of the finest, you know, people. But if they don't see themselves in that, or think that it's a job for them because they don't see somebody that looks like them, it's never going to happen.
I totally agree with you. I think one of the most important points you made there that I often hear the counter argument to is, well, all we're ever going to do is we're going to drop standards. And I kind of chuckle. I say, I don't think anybody's asking if we drop standards. I think we make sure the standards, and you hit it right on the head, is scientifically proven, fair, mm-hmm. equitable, carried out, and standard across the board. And I think that if we do that, we're going to have people, men, women, it doesn't matter, who just can't do the job. And there are people who just can't do it, aren't strong enough, maybe not mentally strong enough because of what they're starting to see. And we talked about the mental health side of things. I don't think that I think that what happens is there's this perception from any type of organization that comes up and represents a certain group within the fire service that's underrepresented. I think a lot of people in that, you talked about tradition, and then the joke I always hear is hundreds of years of tradition unimpeded by progress. You know, it's a lot of times what mm-hmm. we have in the fire service, it's because we've always done it that way. You know, we had the same thing with SCBAs, and nobody wanted to wear them, and now you wouldn't see somebody, you know, ever come onto a scene without it. Just, we start to build this, and I think that there's a lot of people out there who just assume that, well, this is the way we've always done it, and you want to be a firefighter, come to it. And I think you hit around the head. If you have a standardized process, you need to be able to show people that they're capable of it. And whether that's a certain ethnicity or gender, whatever it is, if we're trying to get an underrepresented group, we have to have things in place to make it equitable for them when they get here. But I also think that, as you said, showing them the examples of people who are doing it and doing it well lets them see that, hey, I could do this. I could be that. And I have a friend who retired from our department a few years back, and he's from Detroit. And I asked him what he was going to do when he retired, and he goes, I'm going back to Detroit. And I mean, I remember Palm Beach County is very different than Detroit. I said, well, why are you going? I said, you're leaving Palm Beach County to go back to Detroit. He goes, yeah. He goes, first of all, I can live like a king. He said, it's really cheap. You can live like a king. He goes, but really, more than anything else, he goes, I want to be able to go back and show the kids there that they can make it. He goes, most of the kids that are growing up in the area I'm from are being told they can make it because their parents made it as, and he listed four or five professions that I'm not going to even mention on here because I don't want to offend anybody, but he mentioned them, and he said, you know, they're decent, but he said these are people just struggling to make a living, and they're not feeling fulfilled in their work. And he goes, I want to show them that a black man who is strong enough can go get this job and then come back and retire and then make the city a better place. He goes, because I want to actually help my community. And I was floored. I mean, he was already one of my favorite people in the world. And then we became like best buds. I'm like, I love, and he was so humble. He never told anybody that. I just happened to ask him about it. And I was floored. I loved the fact that he had a purpose and a vision. He goes, Jeremy, just seeing me and allowing me to talk to them and be able to tell them that I went to a department that, you know, makes decent money and can have a retirement. And he said, I can come back here and live and be able to show them. He goes, that's all they need to see. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And I think that kind of seems to me that the picture you're talking about is finding people that look like the underrepresented group and show them that it's possible.
Yeah. And as you said, perception is huge. And, you know, if a woman comes into your station as a new recruit and they sit around the table and say, well, you know, the only reason you got this job is because you're a chick, you know, that's just a wrong way to start off. I met a chief, and I can't remember where exactly he was from. I want to say Bozeman. his name is Josh, and he was the coolest guy, Josh Waldo. And he talked about trying to recruit women in his department, and we were at the Congressional Fire Service seminar, and he talked about how welcoming his folks were, and they don't have a whole lot of women. They're just hiring someone, and his department was so welcoming. And I said, what are you doing? You know, how do you get people to do that? And he said, I don't have to do anything. It's just the integrity of the group that I have working for me. I'm just really lucky. He said, Angie, I'm not doing it. They're doing it. They're not judging. You know, they are welcoming people with open arms and willing to train and to learn together. And that's huge. You know, if you have somebody comes into your station, man, woman, it doesn't matter their race, their gender, you should all be welcoming them and willing to train. If you see somebody that's struggling, say, with ladders, go out there and throw ladders until you figure out how it works. And that will make a huge difference, and they'll appreciate it. The perception with my crew, I have an engine and a medic in my station, and we're 5 women and 2 men, probably one of the most diverse shifts in my department. And we pull up on the scene, and the looks that we get, and one gentleman said, oh, you must all be on the ambulance, you women. And I said, oh, no, the ambulance is up the street here. We're all firefighters. And, you know, even the public doesn't see us in that job, and we're slowly changing that.
Yeah, and I think what you are exactly right. We're slowly changing, and I think that we're doing it with some of the things you just said. I believe maybe that gentleman isn't aware of the fact that he is setting that standard, but he is doing it because he's hiring the right people. If you hire people with integrity, mm-hmm. who are not discriminatory, people who just care about others and I've said before, I think that if we get to the point in the fire service where all we really care about is, can I work with this person? And if we get into a bad situation, do they have the ability to get me out of it? Can they pull me out of that building? And can I pull them out of the building? And are we up to date on our medical protocols if we do that? Or are we up to date on our policies and SOGs? And are we ready to go strategy and tactics? Are we competent? If we do that, most people that I work with couldn't care less if the person next to him was a man, woman, transgender, black, white, Hispanic, Buddhist, Christian. They don't care. Now, it can make for some interesting conversations at the fire station if you disagree on all those things, and it can have some fun with it. But the reality is, on the job, I find that most people don't really care. They just want somebody that's able to do the job. And do you feel like that's kind of what you see there where you're at now?
I mean, sure, and I work for a big department, you know, so I can't speak for the whole department, but in my area, yeah, they're very welcoming. If anybody struggles, we're all going to work together to make sure that in the end, you know, we can get the job done. And, you know, it's all about teamwork, and that's what most people get in the fire service for, you know, because they love the thrill, they love the excitement of the job, but they care, they truly care, and they want to make a difference, and they're all people of great integrity.
I love that. I love that you said that, because that's so true. Let me ask you another question. What are the organizations, let's go back to the organization a little bit, what are the organization's goals, kind of long-term plan? I know you guys made the name change, and obviously it's, when name changes are made, it's more than just, well, that's hard to say. I mean, I know there's all kinds of reasons for those things. You know, what are your goals? What are your plans, short-term, long-term plans?
Sure. So our organization has grown tremendously in the past several years, more than doubled since I have been president. And I think that we focused more on the positive and working together and looking for solutions rather than focusing on the negative things that were going. And I truly owe so much to fire engineering and FDIC and Bobby Halton for welcoming us in that community and, you know, helping to promote the organization. I'm fortunate enough to serve on the board for FDIC and just being able to have that voice there and talk about different things in a positive way. That has made a huge change for us. So we continue to grow, and as we grow, and you mentioned the name change, that did come with a lot of research, and we looked into our membership, our stakeholders, and tried to figure out, you know, what they wanted from us. And we found that a lot of people, as you said, didn't recognize iWomen, And then when you'd say it, they'd say, well, what does that mean? And it was such a long mouthful to say. And then there were even people that were offended by it. You know, oh, well, what does that mean? I am woman, hear me roar. And that's not the image we wanted. So we started with that and looking at what we can do to better the community and what people want from us. And that was the first part, was just a change in our image and our rebranding. So we did that. We rebranded. Now we're Women in Fire. And this is all a part of our strategic plan. So our goals as a part of our strategic plan are to be visible, to be knowledgeable, and be respected amongst the industry. We want to ensure that we're transparent and we're providing value and worth to our members and the department. And that, you know, we're looking to diversify our membership more. As I said, we have members that are male, but I'd say probably a large percentage of our male population and membership are probably fire chiefs or HR, union officials. So we want to see, you know, more men be a part of our organization and help. It's nothing cooler than having the guys buy into it too. And we have a lot of those. So as we look at providing that value and how can we educate and serve better, that's a part of it. And looking at ways to better reach out. We've hired a marketing company to try and help promote us and get more people to know about us. And ensuring that we have the most qualified group of trustees and staff. Along with that, we're trying to open up the opportunities for our membership. It's not just the board members that we want to see out there serving as the voice. I was speaking with a member of your department earlier tonight and just telling her about our state representative program. That's something new that we just announced at FDIC, which is, you know, we may have regional representatives, but to have somebody in your state that can represent and go to local things. I flew down to Key West in the beginning of May for a fallen firefighter crewman symposium, but to have somebody in that area that can go and represent and learn and make those contacts is huge. So we want to make sure that we're giving back to our membership through that way too. So I think that's the beginning of our strategic planning, and we've met most of our goals. So we'll be moving on to our 3- and 5-year goals this year coming up.
Oh, I love that. Well, a couple of things. First of all, don't give Bobby Halton too much credit because he gets really, really, you know, he gets a big head. So, because I thank him on this radio show all the time. So now he's going to get another mention on this radio show. Bobby does such a great job of kind of offering that platform. He does such a good job of finding people who are passionate who may not have the platform and going, hey, here's your voice. And I love that. I was unaware till you just said it, that until you told us on this radio show tonight that men could join Women in Fire. I had no idea. So that's good to know. Yeah. And that's good to pass along. I asked Allie for a shirt at FDIC and she assured me she was going to get me one. Never got me one. Here, I never had the shirt and could have been a member the whole time as well. So I'm going to have to get on to her about that. But I love the direction you guys are going. I love the fact that there's a potential for more people to be able to get involved and help. And I think the perception, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys on here, is the perception often with firefighters is if there's an underrepresented group that comes together like this, then the people that are not part of that group feels like it's us against them. And I try to explain to our firefighters that's not the case. Like if you have a minority group or some other group in the fire service that's getting together, it's not us against them. It's trying to have an equal voice, and we should help that. We should offer a way to help that. And I think that's part of what people should hear in what you're sharing tonight is there are ways for each of us to do that. It doesn't mean that tomorrow we need to go out and hire 100 females at Palm Beach County Fire Rescue. It's not feasible. It's not going to work. But there are ways to gradually make a change and to adjust what we're doing to make sure that we're offering an environment. And once again, I think my department does a really good job. Hopefully, I'm not speaking out of turn with the ladies who work with me who are going to call me and say we got to make all these changes, because if they do, we need to make changes. But it seems to me like we're doing a pretty good job with that, and we'd love to be able to see many other departments do that. And so maybe there are departments out there listening that small, big, volunteer career who are hearing this going, man, I've never thought once about a maternity policy, a lactation policy, whatever the case may be. I've never even considered it because we only have one female, or we don't have any, or it's never been an issue before. So I think it's great that just the conversation gets people starting to think about it. And I was just going to ask you, have you seen that the conversation has really opened up some eyes from people that just had no clue before?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, I have to be really frank and honest. In the beginning of my career, when I started out in the late 80s, being one of the only females in a big department, or, you know, there weren't a lot of women represented. And actually, when I went into Baltimore City, the year I went in as a medic. They hired their first female firefighter at that same time. So, you know, people were just kind of waiting for us to fail, I want to say, I personally always felt like I had to prove myself. So the beginning of my career, I didn't like the groups either. I thought it was a segregation. It wasn't until I really opened my eyes and kind of had, I guess, that aha moment in my career where I was like, what the heck are you doing? To realize what exactly it is. It's not a me against you or us against them. It is about finding a level playing field and all working together. And, you know, it's great that people are recognizing that. And yeah, we do want the male members. Shoot, I would love to see men apply for the state representative position. That would be awesome to have that voice. One of our biggest supporters is John Butler, the fire chief from Fairfax. He's one of my mentors, along with Bobby Halton. When I need advice or have a problem, you know, I don't have to have a female mentor. You know, I have to have the right mentor. And I go to him and ask him for help, and he's given so much great guidance. And, you know, is the first one to tell people, hey, make sure you join this organization. Make sure you get involved. And that's incredible. And sometimes you need that buy-in. You just need that buy-in because you may say it. If I say it to, you know, a group of new men coming into the fire department, they're probably like, oh, there she goes. But if you say, hey, I met this group and I met Allie and they're awesome and they really have a great message, they're going to be more willing to listen and be open to it.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. Well, you also mentioned the state representative thing. You also mentioned conferences. What are the conferences you guys do? What are the trainings that you guys offer?
So we're really excited, and I'm going to give Bobby props again because I just love that guy. We're going to be at FDIC every year now. We were there. We have a one-day leadership conference, and we were doing that on the odd years. And it's funny. My husband went to his first conference with me. He's in the fire department as well. He runs our special operations in Baltimore County. And he went to a conference with me, and he wasn't even going to sit in the conference, and it was in Chicago several years ago. And I said, oh, just come, you know, come and listen. So he sat in there and he said, well, there was only one other man in the room. And it kind of gave him a perspective. This year, when he went to FDIC and sat in our leadership conference, it was probably about a quarter of the room were men. And that was really cool for him, from his perspective. It was like, well, first off, I didn't feel like I stuck out. But it's neat to see that there's so many people coming and getting value from coming to our conferences. So now we will be at FDIC every year in April. Actually, our call for papers is out. So if you want to teach at FDIC, the call for papers ends this Friday night, tomorrow. So make sure you get those in. But if you want to teach at the Women in Fire one-day conference on Monday, the call for presentations will be open till July. So that's another opportunity to get out there and speak and share your message. And you don't have to be a woman to teach at these conferences. You just have to have a good message, and that's what it's all about.
Do I get a t-shirt?
We'll make sure you get a t-shirt. They're pretty cool, though. Our new logo is awesome.
I know, it was awesome. That was great. Do you share the website for people to actually sign up for that call for presentation?
Yeah, it should be if you womeninfire.org.
Okay.
It'll be right under that.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's on social media. We have our own Facebook page. You can find it on there as well. Or contact me, anybody that wants to go onto our website and email me. I'll be happy to get it to you, but it's right on the front of the website.
Okay.
And so along with our standalone or you know, international conferences, a standalone conference in association with FDIC, we'll have that in April. In September of next year, we'll have our standalone conference, which is 2 days of hands-on training, and then a typical conference, 2 days of conference with a lot of networking activities, and that will be in Spokane in September of 2020. The call for papers for that will go out after we do our choices for FDIC. So there's plenty of opportunities, and we actually did a lot of research, and we found that our leadership conference versus our standalone conference, we analyzed all the data that we had from past, I think, about 10 or 12 years, and we found that there were two different groups of people going to the conferences, the leadership conference versus the standalone. So we found that there's a value for having both of them.
That's great. Well, hopefully there are people who are listening who are interested in the actual conference, both speaking and attending. So it's, and by the way, it's for anybody who's listening, it's Women in Fire, not Women on Fire. Make sure we're clear on that, right?
Women in Fire.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are on fire, but you're in fire. So womeninfire.org, and that's a way for you to find out more about the organization. They do have a really cool logo. They did a really good job on that. So if you want to speak at the call presentations, you got that opportunity for FDIC and then the actual standalone there in Spokane in September. So those are great opportunities. I hope people are going to take advantage of that. Are there any local trainings or other types of trainings you do around the country other than the conferences?
So right now we're looking at that as a part of our state representative program. And right here in Maryland, I'm working with, we have three female fire chiefs in the major metro department, with Tricia Wolford in Anne Arundel County, Howard County has Christine Newhorn, and now Baltimore County in July 1st will have our first female fire chief, Joanne Run. And then in PG County, another major metro, Tiffany Green is second in command. I believe it's chief deputy of Prince George's County. So having such a strong presence there, we're working with them to try and do just a trial to see how it goes, to work with maybe some local vendors and do some rescue training. Sure. So that's something that we're working on for the future, and recognize that. And one thing I wanted to say too, you know, while it says Women in Fire, it's Women in Fire incorporates the EMS community too, because there are so many women that are in EMS, and we don't want to exclude them, but we found that this was an easier name to incorporate everyone in the fire service.
You should have been like Women in Fire and Dispatch and Communications and EMS. And you should just add like 18 things on the end of it and have it been even longer than the one before, just to make it really, really difficult to say.
Yeah. Keep it simple, right?
Well, listen. Yeah, exactly. One of the things you mentioned there that I really want to touch on before we wrap this up, you talked about your husband being in that room and saying that he stuck out, felt like he stuck out. About 2 years ago, I think it's two, 3 years ago, I had my friend Vince came on the radio show. We just talked about race relations in the fire service. We're like, hey, let's pick a hot topic. Let's offend everybody. So he is he's about my age. So I'm a white kid from the Midwest, out in kind of the middle of Missouri and Kansas area. Didn't have a whole lot of diversity growing up, and he's a black man from Chicago. So we become friends, and we start talking about kind of the differences and what we've experienced. And we just kind of said, hey, let's just have a conversation on the radio. And one of the things he brought up that I really had not thought about before was, he said, whenever you feel like the us against them part, he said, think about the sticking out part. He said, what I mean by that is, he goes, if you've ever been the only one of something in a group, it doesn't matter what it is, you're the only, and he talked about the fact he was the only black person in a group of all white people, or his family was the only black family in a group, or you're the only white family at a group of Hispanics having a birthday party, or you're the only female in a group. So he kind of went through that whole thing. He did this great illustration of it. He goes, when you have that moment, and he said, it's uncomfortable. He said, no matter what you say about it, it's uncomfortable. And he told a few stories about why it's uncomfortable and some ways it is. And he said, if you ever feel that way, he said, that's how you should kind of put in perspective what these small groups are putting together just to feel some comfort level. He said, because when you do that, you're having to adjust to someone else's culture. He said, so in the conversation we're having tonight, a female that comes into a fire service that is the first female or one of very few females in an all male fire service is having to adjust, right? I mean, am I saying that correctly? I mean, that's kind of the idea, right? So his point was, he goes, when that's the case, he goes, why would we not support a group that gets those individuals together to help them be able to adjust and to help us adjust for them and to them? He goes, that's what the fire service should be about. And I had never thought about it like that before. And when he said that, I went, wow. He goes, because he was sharing the story. Actually, his illustration was great. He said his daughter was in a play of some sort. And I think it was at their church. I don't remember all the details, but he invited one of his friends from the fire service to come. And the friend was the only white person, the only white family that came to this event. And he kind of looked at him and he goes, how you feel, buddy? He goes, I feel fine. He goes, you feel a little awkward? He goes, yeah, a little bit. He goes, welcome to my world. And he said, it was this, and he said, they kind of had a laugh about it. And he said, it really opened his eyes. And I think that's, if we could get to that point where we go, this is not just about me. It's about seeing things from the perspective of others. And we train our firefighters and medical personnel on this all the time, because that's what customer service is. I mean, really, really, truly high level customer service is, how is that patient, how is that citizen feeling right now? Why did they call 911? And how do I meet their need wherever they're at, regardless of the differences we have? And I think if we can train on that, we already do it, and I think we do a pretty good job in most of our departments. This is really just another step in that progression. If we can start to see it that way and go, I'm just simply, we talk about internal and external customers. Now I'm going to help take care of my internal customer. We take care of our citizens very well. Let's take care of our people, regardless of what their differences are. And I think if we could get to that point, we would all begin to start helping with groups like yours and the mission statement, because our mission would be the same. And I think that's what we have to get to. And maybe, I don't know if you have any more comments about how we can start doing that or how we start to change that narrative in the fire service.
Yeah, and I think that's a really powerful message, because it's about empowering each other. It's about building each other up. And you know, going to the first women's conference I ever went to was in Portsmouth, Virginia, and it was a really cool experience, and just to see people not pinned against each other and to support each other is great. And it just gives you a whole new perspective of things. And that has to start. I mean, you know, I truly feel most fire chiefs buy into it, but I think it's got to start at a station level. You have to have, you know, the daily crews, you have to have the company officers that are buying into it and educating their folks. And you know what, saying if you don't like it, or you don't want to see women in the job, or you don't want to see African Americans, keep your opinion to yourself, and you better treat everybody the same, because if you don't treat them right, we're going to hold you accountable. And that's where it's got to start. Just having that, like I said, I call them courageous conversations. And, you know, it's got to start at the station level. Fire chiefs buy into it. They get it. But they're not seeing what's happening. If you have a big department like mine or yours, they're not seeing that, you know, at the station level, what's going on all the time. And we have to correct those behaviors in a positive way.
I love that. Well, before we wrap up, are there any other things you'd like to, that I didn't cover, that you'd like to share about Women in Fire, or website or conferences or other goals? Or I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything, because you've got so much good information here, and there's so many good principles and good things we're doing. I really want to make sure we don't miss anything.
Yeah, you know, and I probably am missing something, but I appreciate the opportunity. And I just encourage everybody, you know, reach out, ask someone about the organization that's a member of it. You mentioned some great women that are active in the organization, but check out our website. It's womeninfire.org. You can actually buy that T-shirt off the website, too, if you want that.
I was kind of buying this one.
Okay, well, I'll talk to her about that. And, you know, we're doing great things, and we're, you know, just working with a bunch of different partners and stakeholders throughout the fire service and serving as that voice. You know, we're very appreciative of the opportunities that we have with the National Fire Academy, the NFPA, fallen firefighters, that they all have found it that our voice means something. And, you know, most especially the fact that we're welcomed with a big dog, you know, so to say, at Fire Engineering and FDIC. For me, having the opportunity to keynote on that big stage and have that platform was the most humbling experience of my life. So, you know, I will forever be grateful for that, and our organization will forever be grateful of those partnerships. So anybody has any questions, they can reach me. My email is right on the website. Reach out to any of our regional area trustees, and we'll be happy to answer questions, you know, or give advice.
Well, great. And just I hope that if we didn't accomplish anything else tonight, hopefully we got a conversation started for some people. And I think that's really what it is. And if we didn't accomplish anything else, hopefully accomplishing the goal of people realizing that we're not at odds with each other. We're trying to all work to the same goal, which is to get the best firefighters we can in the department and to represent the group that we're helping and that we're responding to. I think that there's some ways to do that. There's a whole lot of factors that go into it, but you guys are doing a great job of being that voice. And so we appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I just really encourage all of you who are listening. This is just one topic of so many where we as firefighters and as fire service have to come together and work. We have to realize what the mission is, and it's not just be the fastest we can to a call and take care of a problem. There's so much more to it than that. And we have to start remembering that we have internal customers. We have people we serve that work alongside us, that work for us, that work above us, who need our support. And so we need to start thinking in those terms. So I think what you guys are doing is amazing. Thank you for being that voice. And I hope we can help you with that. And I hope that there are people out there who are now thinking, hey, I can go to the conference, even though I'm not a female, I could actually go attend that and learn something. So maybe open some eyes tonight. And we just really appreciate you being on the show with us, Angie. And just thank you for what you're doing up there. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. And one thing I did forget to mention is, if you know, finding out more information about the emerging issues for women, we did just publish a document that was published April, it went live on the United States Fire Administration's mm-hmm. website, and it talks about those issues and those things, but it also gives solutions. So we're not only talking about the problems, we're talking about solutions for the many different things that we face in the fire mm-hmm. service. So that'd be a great thing to look at too, if you're looking at recruiting, retaining, you know, a more diverse fire service, you would want to check that out too. But, and thank you for having us on and knowing the importance of this conversation. It's greatly appreciated.
No problem. Well, it's my pleasure. Once again, anytime you talk to Allie, whatever she's part of, you kind of want to be a part of. So I was like, hey, I got to find out what Women in Fire is. So thank you so much for being on here. We appreciate it. Have a great night. Be safe the next time you're on shift. Thank you.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And as we wrap up this episode, I just want to thank Kevin Hughes for being on here. We thank her for what she's doing with that organization. If you're interested in learning more about it, I'd encourage you to go to their website, womeninfire.org. I got to talk to some of the ladies up there in Indianapolis, and just very impressive what they're doing. And they're the goals and the objectives of the organization are phenomenal. So check it out, see how you can get involved. And if you're an organization or a fire department that is struggling with this, reach out for the resources. They can help you with that. They can help you even probably with some hiring standards and practices to make sure it's fair. And for all of you who aren't sure it's important, just if nothing else, think about the liability that comes from not doing this the right way with any group. Just make sure that you're doing it the right way. And we appreciate all that she did for us tonight and the conversation. And thank you for what you're doing in the fire service. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. And until next time, we'll see you soon. Thanks. Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.